It's Tuesday evening, November 11th. It's Rabbi Feldman's Shia.
Good evening. The topic for tonight was a suggestion of Dr. Lustiger, so we take the suggestion seriously. Even though the topic is a little bit of a shorter one, so we may be a little shorter than usual, although I'll probably supply enough coughs to fill it out a little bit more. But essentially, it's a subset of an issue that we've talked about in the past, and that's the issue of the prohibition of embarrassing people in public, which I believe we have talked about probably in the past, if I remember correctly. It's treated as a very serious prohibition in the Talmud, particularly in the end of the fourth parak of Bav Metzia. So there's an extensive discussion of the concept of onos devarim. Onos devarim, the word onah meaning oppression, affliction, however you want to translate it. So we have a prohibition in the Torah of losonu isha samisa, we're not allowed to afflict each other, and that's understood in a couple of contexts. We have a context primarily of monetary oppression, which it will translate as focusing on price gouging. If I charge way too much of a markup on something, creating an oppressive financial atmosphere, so that's the prohibition of onah. And in that context, the Mishnah tells us that kishen shiyesh onah b'mamon, kach yesh onah b'dvarim. So it's not only in the financial realm that we have onah, but we also have onah b'dvarim, which will translate as onah with words, oppression through speech, which is really a much broader category. It's emotional pain. If you cause somebody emotional oppression through the way you relate to them, which doesn't really have to be verbal, it's really a very broad category that includes a lot of things. Shafi Rayam writes that if you show somebody a nasty expression, that's also on the Ost of Arm. A lot of things you could do which are included within this heading, but certainly if you say things that cause people pain without justification, so then that's in this prohibition of anostvar. So in that context, so the Gemara has a discussion about embarrassing people. It's prohibited to embarrass people in public, and there's a lengthy sugya in the Talmud, and again, it's a topic of significant analysis that we've spoken about in the past. So towards the end of this discussion, so the Gemara makes a statement that there are three people who yardim legehenin ve'enim olim. They go down to be punished, and not like everything else, where they're punished for a short period of time and then they come back up. Here they're yardim ve'enim olim, they don't come back. And what are these very severe prohibitions? So the Talmud says, well, two of them are if somebody embarrasses somebody in public, or somebody who refers to his friend with a bad nickname. Somebody who mechanav chaveru shemra, somebody uses a bad nickname in order to refer to his friend. So the Talmud asks, seems to be redundant. I would assume that what's the issue in talking to somebody with a nasty nickname? Sounds like what you're doing is you're embarrassing them. That's what it seems like. It seems like this is simply a subset of that prohibition. So why should that be counted as two separate things? This is all one thing. So the Talmud has a statement here, the greater chiddush, that it's true when it comes to using nicknames, afa pisha doshbe, even if it's already used, and dashbe means you're stamped over it already, you already walked over it, it's already a well-worn path, it's already in usage, so then there's still a prohibition. What does dashbe mean? Parenthetically, you find some Rishonim, which from the Sadash and others who use another context, that means it's been 30 days already, the period of dashbe. It's an old name, so it's already been in usage. It's not you all of a sudden decide in a crowd to refer to somebody in a derogatory way, but it's a name that's been in usage for a while, and the implication seems to be that they don't really feel the sting of humiliation anymore. And apparently it's already taken root, so that initial stage where they're deeply embarrassed is past. So even at that stage, there's still a prohibition. So why is it still a prohibition if the humiliation is no longer in full force, if we're already beyond that point? So Rashi writes over there that even though he's not really feeling so embarrassed, still in the skavim ha'chlimo, he intended to embarrass him, and it sounds like, we'll talk about this more a little bit later, that seems to be the focus, that it's one thing to embarrass somebody, and it's another thing to do something which is intended to degrade them, even if it's beyond the stage where it already causes pain. Some sources suggest that there's a distinction to be made here between somebody who creates the name and somebody who perpetuates the usage of a name that was already suggested by others, and it's a distinction which is essentially not a distinction. I'm telling you there's two different categories, but it doesn't matter. Essentially, this is also within this prohibition of using a negative nickname. It might be possible to suggest that there is another element here that really goes beyond the normal type of humiliation, and perhaps that's what the Gemara is getting at. That there's general ways of embarrassing people. It's a general broad category of Malbim Panei Chaver Barabim. And then more specifically, there is an issue here that relates specifically to the concept of names. That when people have names, as we all do, so that name becomes a fundamental part of their identity. It's the way they connect to themselves. It's the way they know that they're unique and that they're different. And when somebody is deprived of their name, then in a sense they're being cut off from themselves. It's very alienating. They no longer relate to society as a participant. They're now being forced out, in a sense. They're not an individual within the society. They don't participate as themselves. And there is a certain level of alienation there, which is a whole different category. And perhaps that's what the Talmud is telling us, that it's one thing to cause people humiliation, it's another thing to cause this sense of perhaps existential alienation that comes from cutting them off from themselves and not acknowledging the way that they would normally expect to be referred to. And perhaps that's what the Talmud is telling us here, that separate from any type of an insulting name. It's not necessarily the fact that you're saying something that is by its very nature humiliating, but it's the fact that you're cutting them off from their primary way of relating to society. So if one takes that position, so then it could be that that's why we also do find a discussion about maybe this should be true even if the name is not inherently insulting, maybe even if it's innocuous. And it's interesting, one could suggest perhaps Shustel, that one might derive some kind of indication to this from a Tosus from the beginning of Masechus Nedarim. He's really talking about something else, but he uses the same word. The Talmud's word for a nickname in this context is a kinui. So if anybody was learning a Daf Yomi for Nedarim or for Nazir, so you know that the first Mishnah in each of those Masechus uses the word kinui and says, "Kol kinui Nedarim piyadarim, kol kinui Naziris Naziris." That just like there's certain languages, certain phrases that are effective in creating a vow, in creating a binding oath. So too, a kinui also works. If you use, I guess we'll call it a nickname, an alternate word for taking a vow or taking an oath of Naziris, so that's also effective. So if you look in the first daf in the Nedarim, so Tosfos on the side of the page comments, what does the word kinui mean? So Tosfos has two gerses, two different possibilities. It seems to be a scribal issue because the words rhyme, so presumably it was a question of what was correct gersa. That either it is a shem shofel, which will translate to mean a low name, a name of some type of degradation, or it's not a refined way of referring to something, or it's a shem tofel. Again, it rhymes and looks very similar, so it's probably a question of gersa. A shem tofel will be translated as a secondary name. So what does the word kinui by its definition mean? Does it mean a secondary name, which doesn't necessarily carry any judgment, just by its nature it's not the primary name? Or is it a shem shofel, where the name itself seems to suggest it's a name of low quality, that perhaps it is degrading in some sort? So this question that we find in Poskim, that this whole question of referring to somebody by a nickname, is it just an insulting nickname, or is it really any nickname, could perhaps be traced to these two opinions in Tosfos, that the very word kinoi can be translated in two ways. On the other hand, so you could notice that the Gemara doesn't just call it kinoi, it calls it hamechane shem ra. So it does have this adjective of ra, suggesting that it's not simply a neutral name, but it is a negative name. So why would you even think to say maybe something that's not inherently negative should even be considered? So that's something Paul's going to talk about there, the Tshuva Shraga HaMeir of Snellbag from London has a Tshuva about this, in which he notes that sometimes the line is very thin, and it could be that, and this unfortunately, especially if ever went to high school, so you know that this could often be the case, that a name, the person who's receiving it might think it's neutral and the rest of the society might think it's negative, and he might be an unwitting recipient of a joke, of a treatment that's degrading that he doesn't realize. And we know from other sources in Chazal that it's possible to embarrass somebody without them knowing. You can embarrass a person who's sleeping, we find from the Mishnayos and Bava Kamma, that it's possible for there to be a humiliation to come to a person even if that person doesn't realize what's going on. So that's potentially a serious issue. We find that the line is not always so clear. So it could be that even if the Gemara uses this language of shame ra, that still there might be worth being very careful about this. And you find that indeed that's the attitude that Tosfos takes. Tosfos takes the attitude of Maseches Megillah and Daf Kaf Tes, that it's worth avoiding even neutral nicknames. See, Tosfos is commenting, and the Gemara says there, Gemara, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, the Gemara there in the end of Megillah has a discussion about how a lot of the Rabbanim are asked, B'meh ha'arach t'yamim, what do you do? What's your source of merit that has given you a long life? Which is a fascinating concept in general, the assumption being that people know. If you ask a person what it is that gave you such a long life, apparently they're clued into the heavenly computers, and they can pick it out what it is that has given them a long life. It's an interesting Musar Hashgul in of itself, the type of spiritual sensitivity that it requires to somehow be aware of what your special merit is. But that's the assumption that Gemara has this whole discussion. People were asked about Meharach the Yamin. So I believe it was Mifunya Ben Hakana who said that he was very careful not to ever refer to anybody by nicknames. So the Tosfos raises the question that that's not a way to get a long life. That's a way to stay out of Gehenna. The Gemara says that that's a terrible prohibition. So you should say that this is a special source of merit, that you avoid doing something that's so at the terrible crimes. Therefore, Tosfos suggests that maybe it's saying that sometimes their name's not so clear, it's so bad, that maybe it's worth avoiding even that, just in case. Or maybe because, again, it still disconnects people from their identity, even if it's not humiliating. And therefore, there's two levels. The level of using a bad nickname, which is really going to get you in trouble. And then if you really want to score some extra points, then to avoid even using any such nickname at all. And here he goes even further. Here he says that even a name that the person doesn't object to at all, he would avoid. He would stay away from in light of this, perhaps this misunderstanding. But on the other hand, sometimes people welcome a nickname. Sometimes they like a name better than their own name. And then if they like it, then they embrace it. So then it becomes a welcome part of their identity. They want to connect to society that way. So there are these distinctions that come up, and that's also something to be aware of. And that's why it takes a little bit of judgment to know which one we're talking about. I always find that it's relevant to see if a person uses the nickname himself. The person calls you up on the phone and says, hi, it's so-and-so, and he uses the nickname. So then that's usually a clue. It's not even foolproof in itself, because maybe he's just trying to fit in. But if somebody happily identifies himself by a nickname, then it's probably a clue he's happy about it, is okay with it. If you don't have an indication like that, then very often it means he's not so okay with it, and that's or he's just only marginally okay with it, and that's often irrelevant in the case. But again, even that, you never know. Maybe he's just trying to identify himself the way everyone else does, and it's a subtle factor which has to be carefully evaluated. This whole notion that there's a severity that's going to be much greater when talking about a negative nickname, there's a sefer called Hilchos Derech Eretz. It was written by Rav Yaakov Davidson, who pointed out that there's an interesting difference in halacha, which unfortunately is a reflection on the way real life works, that we have a din, you have a room that's unclean, a room that's used for unclean purposes. You have a bathroom, something like that, so it's not appropriate. You can't learn Torah in such a room, you can't daven in such a room, things like that. So this is true also about a bathhouse. Bathhouse isn't the same thing, but it has this halacha as well. And you find the distinction as far as how they're treated, that a bathhouse has to be actually used as a bathhouse, and then if it gets the status, and then you're not supposed to learn it. When it comes to a bathroom, a lavatory, so it's not necessary that it actually gets used. But if it's designated as one, you build it and you decide, okay, this is going to be a bathroom, even though it's never been used before, it's never been used for anything. So then that type of hazmana, as the Gemara talks about, it's been designated for that purpose. So then already it has the salacha, then already it can't be used for a Talmud Torah. So why is there a difference? Both places should have the same halacha. So why is it that one has to actually be used and one already, once you designate it, it's already enough? As the Mishnah Berurah explains, that the bathroom is an even more degrading purpose, so to speak, than the bathhouse. And the more negative something is, the quicker it sticks for a factor of life. So when it comes to the bathroom, it's enough already just to call it that, and it already sticks with that name. It already has that chalos. And when it comes to the bathhouse, it's not as degrading, so it has a little bit of a different status. It has to actually practically be used for that. And that's the way life is also. It's the way it is with the things people say about people, the things people use to call each other. And unfortunately, it's an unfortunate fact of life that the more negative it is, the more it sticks, the quicker it latches on. And therefore, that fact is in here also as part of the severity with which we find it. So that's an issue also. At the same time, we find if you go through Shas, read Mar Makomas, or if they go through Shas, you find that there are a lot of times when people are identified by what seems to be nicknames. You find that Rav Yossi is called Achare. Achare is when Rishon explained means he has sunken nostrils. So Tosfos says it means that's where he comes from. So Tosfos is Shitasa, because Tosfos is not going to want any nicknames at all. But others explain that it refers to physical characteristics, which seems to be a little bit insulting. It's a common expression you find in Shas, Shinina. Shinina, some of the Rishonim explains, it means a sharp one. Shita Mekubetis, right? It means the person who has big teeth. So it sounds like you're talking about physical characteristics. So it's hard to understand how that's appropriate in light of some of the strictures that we find here. So that's how some of the Sfarim write, that it really all depends on intent, and it depends on how it comes across. And it could be that the culture is a little different than we understand. The things that nowadays would sound insulting to talk about a physical characteristic, to use that as an identifying element. Apparently in that culture it wasn't so bad. Now there's a tshuva about this in the Chafetz Yar, which was reprinted appropriately in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. If you look in the back of the Chafetz Chaim, so he has a tshuva about this, that how is it that sometimes we find sentences in Chazal which don't seem to match what we would think of as a civil discourse, especially in light of the halakhic concepts regulating this. So I'm sure there's a lengthy discussion explaining how the context in which to take these things in and going through each one, what it means, what it doesn't mean. So that needs answers, all of those cases. But part of that is part of it has to do with context. And that's what the Ben Ish Chai writes. The Ben Ish Chai in one of his tshuvas, which is Tara L'shva, and it said essentially HaKol L'fi HaMakom V'Hazman, that everything depends on the place and the context in which you're in, and there's going to be different standards and different times, like you find by last names. So sometimes in some contexts to use a last name to communicate with somebody is the way things work, and sometimes it's considered to be very not nice to call somebody by their last name. So it all depends on the context. There's a Medrash where he said by family names that David HaMelech was embarrassed by people who referred to him as Ben Yishai. So that's his family name. He was the son of Yishai. And sometimes in some context that's appropriate, and sometimes it's a way of putting somebody down. That's also part of what factors into this whole discussion. But it's interesting, and it's pointed out by some, that the Ben Yishai, when he explains everything, so he quotes various proofs from the Gemara. He doesn't talk about the Hachorim case and other things like that. So some suggest, and this is a discussion about the paper on Chumash, who also has a Silas and Shuvas, it's called the Derash of Chakartas. He has a Shuvah about this in his Shuvas, and he suggests that, first of all, so sometimes there's a difference between whether you're talking about somebody, which you're talking to somebody, or you're talking about somebody. That if you're not talking to them, you're talking about them, not in their presence, so it's very possible that this whole story might be different. So the whole story might be different for two reasons. One reason is because they're not really going to be embarrassed. If they don't hear the reference, so then that certainly shifts the arena of action. Doesn't necessarily make it so wonderful. It depends on intent. If you're talking about people in a degrading manner, even if they're not there, so then that comes upon lashon hara issues. but it doesn't necessarily involve the same type of issues as communication if they're not there, especially because you could have an extra motivation for doing it this way, because it could be you're doing it for identification purposes. That when I'm talking to somebody, so then they know who I'm talking to. But if I'm talking about somebody, I might need an extra way to identify them to people who I'm talking to, and maybe that might be a nickname. So if that's my purpose, if it's innocent purpose and it's the purposes of identification, so then a lot of the posting thought that that should be acceptable. There's a tshuva, who was a rabbi named from Silverberg, who has a number of svarim, and he has tshuvas as well. And he has a discussion there about the situation where there were two people in town named Chaim. So one of the Chaims was very tall. So in order to make clear who they were talking about, when they would talk about the tall Chaim, they would call him Chaim Aruchim. He was a long Chaim, so he had a long life. He said, in that case, it's a bracha also, so sometimes it comes out well. So if it's just for the purposes of identification, besides the fact that it's a bracha in that case, but if it's for the purposes of identification, so then that is an extra reason to view it differently, and that might also be part of the equation. So you do find a different attitude when the person isn't present. And again, for these two reasons. One, maybe because it doesn't have the same level of humiliation, but again, that also has to be taken within its appropriate context. It's still not proper to talk about people in a degrading way if they're not there. But also the motive of identification rather than anything else becomes relevant when you're talking about them rather than to them, and that's also a big part of the equation. To mention briefly another short topic, which also is a subset, or presumably a subset of this whole arena. There is a famous story that they tell about Rabbi Saul Salanter. And Salanter, of course, is not his real name. We identify him by calling him as of Salant. He took on the Shittas of Shmuel Salant, the Zundel Salant. He was, his name was Saul Lipkin. We call him Rabbi Saul Salanter. So Rabbi Saul Salanter was once, allegedly, walking down the street, and he saw two little boys fighting with each other. And they were fighting about which one of them was taller. One boy said, I'm taller, the other boy said, I'm taller, and they were trying to measure the whole thing, and they were fighting back and forth, and finally one boy couldn't take it anymore. He pushed the other boy to the ground. And he said, there you go, now I'm taller. So Saul saw this, and surprisingly was not impressed, and he said, why do you have to do that? He could have just stood on a box, and then he would be taller. So there's two different ways to be taller. Either you can stand on a box, or you can knock the other guy down. So this isn't simply a story. This is a halachic concept, which is a very serious one. This is a notion that's referred to in halacha. It's called miskabed b'klon chaveiro. That if somebody is honored, somebody makes himself honored, miskabed, through the clone, through not cloning, but through the, it's not a way to get honored, clone somebody else's chash. But in halachic terminology, clone kuf lamed vav nun means the disgrace of somebody else. If you take somebody else's disgrace and you use that to lift yourself up, that's called miskaveg b'klon chaveiro. And we find that that's subject to very strong criticism, but it's interesting that it's different types of criticism. That in the Talmud Bavli, so it's part of that list we mentioned before, that if you want to have a long life, you're advised not to be miskaveg b'klon chaveiro. It's one of the things that's included in this whole b'mei harach l'yamim list. But you find in the Rambam much more severe language, that the Rambam says that miskaveg b'klon chaveiro eilo chelek l'olam haba. He has no portion in the next world. Now he didn't just make that up. That has the sources in Chazal also, but that's in the Yerushalmi, that language. It's also in the Midrashim. So it seems to be, some have suggested that maybe there's a Machlokas and Machlokas HaSugyos here, that the Yishalmi and the Midrashim believe that this is so severe that it has no chayalat in Olam Haba, and that the Gemara of the Bavli takes it as something Milo, that if you avoid this, then it's the way to have a long life. So which one is it? Is it just good advice to have a long life, or is it even more severe that if you engage in this type of behavior, you have no chayalat in Olam Haba? So it might be that it's a difference in attitudes in Chazal, or it could be, as many have suggested, that it's just talking about two different degrees, that everyone agrees to both points, that there is one level which is simply a good way to have a long life, and there's another level which you have to avoid at the pain of very severe punishment. And the question is, which degree are we talking about? So it could be on the one hand a question of frequency. Now, the Rambam himself, the Rambam talks about such things in his commentary to the Mishnayos in Sanhedrin, where it talks about who has no chelak in Olam Haba. So in his comments there, so he has an idea that runs through. It's probably relevant here as well. For example, when we talk about embarrassing people in public, which again I think we mentioned this point in the past, so the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos that such a person has no chelak in Olam Haba, and the Gemara in Bava Metzia that we started off with also says that somebody who embarrasses people has no chelak in Olam Haba. So the Rambam has a different take on that than some of the other Rishonim. And the Rambam says, why is this true? Why is it that the person has no chelak in Olam Haba? So he doesn't take it as somebody who does this once, that this is the punishment for one action along these lines. But he says that somebody who regularly does this, somebody who does this consistently, that puts him in a very specific halachic category known as a jerk. And a person like that, so you could assume it's probably not a Ben Olam Haba, not that it's a direct equation, but that this is a clue, that this is the type of character. So he's probably not on the list, of people who made it up there. So it's unlikely that such a person is on the list. So in the way that Rambam understands it, that's a distinction in a way which could explain his comments in Mishnah Torah, that it's not that this is different than the Bavli that we're talking about, that there's something, you know, if you want to have a long life, so then make sure never to do this ever. But if you want to avoid losing a chelak in Olam Haba, then don't be the type of person who does this regularly. Don't be the type of person who does this constantly. So that's one way to distinguish. Another way that you find also is that there are very different degrees. That the cases in the Gemara Megillah we're talking about, it's a whole different level. That there's one type in the Shkabi Bichlo and Chavero where a person might actively try to raise himself up at the expense of other people. So that's a pretty severe transgression. A person tries to build himself up by knocking the other person down and by creating the contrast. So then that's a very severe issue. Well, the Gemara and Megillah, the cases that he avoided there to get a long life, it's a much more subtle thing. And the Gemara talks about if somebody wants to carry your bags, you come to visit the town, and he says, let me carry your luggage for you, and he's a very distinguished person, doesn't normally go around carrying people's bags. So he says, no, I don't want to let you carry my bags, that's not your normal status, I don't want to get benefit. In the case here, not the benefit of contrasting me with him, but the benefit of my bags being carried, I don't want that to happen through somebody else having to lower himself. So it's a whole different definition of the term. So then that's what the Gemara Megillah is saying, that not that the person is not going to seek to lift himself up, that somebody else would expect that. Everyone agrees it is really bad. But what the Gemara is talking about as an extra mila is that a person who doesn't want to get any benefit at all through somebody else being disgraced. Even if it's a neutral benefit, that would come through somebody else having to lower himself, he was interested in avoiding that completely. So that's where you find the distinction. Along those lines, a suggestion, just to see how this could branch out, Mishpatei Uziel has a discussion that maybe this should even be true, that maybe this should be a reason not to benefit from medical investigations on cadavers. You take a person who's deceased and to then cut him up and use him to gain knowledge. Maybe that's the type of miscavige, the clone chagera, that here the person is being laid out and cut up to benefit from that. Maybe that's an issue. He doesn't conclude that way. He doesn't conclude that that's the operative issue. That's a whole topic for another time. But it's interesting that the notion of miscavige, the clone chagera, being brought up in that context is a way of drawing benefit through somebody else being treated in an undignified manner. It doesn't really matter because Meis doesn't really conclude that it's the issue, but it's interesting for the usage of the phrase, that it's a way of saying that, oh, here you're drawing benefit through somebody's disgrace. So the fact that it's not personal that helps, maybe, and there's probably other factors that help also, because he doesn't count it in the end as the operative issue, but it's just the consideration is just interesting in terms of how you relate to the term. You also find some of the Kubalskim ask the question about maybe it makes a difference if think of Shagai Meir again was asked the question as Nibru, as a truth about this. Binyamin Yeshua was over, he recently passed away. He was one of the great Bali Musar and Bnei Brak, and he has done many volumes of Chuvas called As Nibru. So he was asked, in order to violate Miskabe B'Kon Chavero, so does that mean that you have to actively say it? Say, I look, I'm better than him. You see the difference? See how much better I am than that guy? Or is it enough if you set up a situation and you don't actually say it? So you suggest, but again, it's a distinction. There's different levels. So if you do it so explicitly, that's gefährlich. That puts you in the very bad category. If you do it less obviously, then that's also bad, but not in the same level of bad. And maybe that's the kind of behavior which we say to avoid. Many have pointed out that there are different components to this prohibition. That on the one hand, so there is the fact that this is simply not a way to build yourself up. It's not a way you get merit in this world. And it's interesting to note that the different statements that we have, as much as they reflect very different degrees, they're in the same category, that they all talk about reward and punishment. That the Gemara on the Bavli saying that you want to get reward, you should avoid being mishtabek b'kron chavera, and the Yerushalmi saying that you want to lose your chelek at Olam Haba, you engage mishtabek b'kron chavera. So whether or not those are talking about the same thing, it is noteworthy that they're both focusing on reward and punishment rather than on other types of terminology. So as some have pointed out, that it has to do with the fact that we're talking about the substance of your accomplishments in life. And the fact is that this is a hollow accomplishment. If the only accomplishment that you have is through comparison, is through saying, look, I'm better than that guy, so it's essentially an empty life. That's not really accomplishment. So if you want to have a chelek in Olam Haba, if you want to have a long life, you want to get rewarded, so you have to actually do something. It's not enough to be comparatively good. So it's not going to get you a long life if your road to success has been through mishkabi b'klon chavero. And again, the converse is also true, because again, if all your merit in this world just comes from pushing the other guy down, so then if he doesn't benefit, you don't benefit. You're not going to have much of substance there. So then it's understandable that the usage is often in this context of reward and punishment, because it relates to the substance of whether you've actually accomplished anything with your life or whether it's all relative. In addition, it's also, as they point out, it's also a problem in behalf of Rechei Kamocha, almost by definition. You know, it's not only that you wouldn't want this done to you, but that the whole action is predicated on that I'm doing, what I'm making you put in a position that you wouldn't want to be in so that I can get what I want. It undermines the whole nature of the definition of Yahavu Rechei Kamocha. It's mathematically impossible to fulfill Yahavu Rechei Kamocha through this type of zero-sum game where you have to be knocked down in order for me to get up. And that's a very serious issue also, how it undermines the Klal Gadol B'Torah in such a fundamental way. So that's also an issue. And as well, to bring us back to our first point, is that it's a problem of Habanus Pnei Chaver V'Rabin, and it's a problem of embarrassing people. And again, that's the whole nature of what's going on. The Klon Chaver means the disgrace of somebody else, so you're going to knock them down. So in addition to all the other problems, so then it's presumably an act of design as well. So that's very much a part of it, and that's why, again, you also find the post I'm talking about, this question of Miskabi the Kohen Favero. So does that mean specifically in the presence of the other person, or does it mean even if he's not present? So it's the same question that we find by the nicknames, and it also relates to this aspect. Are we talking about causing them humiliation? Are we talking about something else? And here again you find Polskin distinguishing, maybe again there's bad and there's worse here, along these lines. And it also reflects this additional component. If you're causing emotional pain to that person who you are knocking down, then that's an additional element as well. Okay, so maybe we'll stop there just to quickly review what we spoke about. So we spoke about some of these subsets of the larger prohibition of embarrassing people in public. As we mentioned, there is this category of Anas Dvarim that we find in the Talmud in the end of the fourth parak of Mishnah, that if I cause somebody emotional pain, that's a prohibition of Anah. And the Gemara mentions that in addition to embarrassing people in public, so another very severe prohibition which causes a eternal punishment is using a bad nickname for somebody, and the Gemara said that's the same thing. So says the Gemara, no, that this is prohibited even if they're already used to it, even if there's already been used to it. And Rashi says, could you intend to embarrass them? Some suggest it means that there's no difference between creating it and perpetuating it, and we suggested that maybe there's an issue here that a person's name is the way they connect to society and to themselves, and that cutting them off from that is a very severe problem. And then that raises the question as a whole of whether we would include even innocent nicknames in this whole story. We mentioned Tudei Asintosis in the beginning of Nidarim, whether Kinoi should be translated as Shem Shafel, a low name, or Shem Tafel, a secondary name. And then we talked about the question, in fact, Gemara does use the word Ra, and the Shulchan Aruch does as well. So why should you distinguish? Maybe it's because there are situations where the line is very thin, and there could be situations where society views a name negatively and the person doesn't realize that it's negative. And we find Tosfos talking about avoiding even innocent nicknames as a Milo. The Meir is saying avoiding even names that person doesn't mind, but we do see that there is sometimes a case where a person will welcome this identification, and that's something that we take into consideration as well. We mentioned the distinction that we find illustrated through the distinction between a bathhouse and a lavatory as far as whether it's off limits to Torah only when it's used or when it's designated as such, as Mishnah Berurah explained, that a negative nickname is of much more severe consequence than others, because negativity sticks more quickly. And then we talked about the differences in intent being a crucial factor, and how that is probably relevant to a lot of the cases in the Gemara. We mentioned the Chavos Yaris Tshuva as printed in the Chavos Chaim, and we talked also about the question of Makom and Zman being operative elements, and also the question of the person is present or not. If they're not present, so it's less humiliating, but also might give an extra justification, and maybe it's there for identification, which is also a relevant reason to be lenient. We mentioned Chaim Arufim as an example. And then we talked a little bit about Miskavi B'Kol Chavero in general as another subset of embarrassing people, how we find that halacha, that there is this tremendous criticism directed at somebody who would draw his own honor through the expense of other people, and that the Bavli says avoiding this is a source of a long life, but the Yerushalmi goes much further and says that doing this causes you to lose your chelek in Olam Haba, and the Rambam, where the Rambam and the Yerushalmi and the Midrashim write, and we talked about various possible distinctions to say that's not necessarily machlokas. Talked about frequency, how the Rambam might mean that if somebody does this all the time, that's where you find the problem. It's consistent with what he writes in other sources. Now it also could be, a question of whether we're talking about actively trying to knock somebody down, or we're talking about a more moderate type of enjoying any benefit at all, even neutral benefit, but one that has to come through somebody else being embarrassed. We mentioned a discussion about whether medical autopsies are in that category. And then we talked about other reasons to distinguish, again, whether it's stated straight out or whether it's more implicit, and the question of various elements that are included within this prohibition, the fact that it negates any real accomplishment in life because it takes away all substance, and that's why it would be both in the context of reward and the context of punishment brought up in those settings, and also the aspect of the Yahavto Yecha Kamocha, how it negates the very assumption and basis of the Yahavto Yecha Kamocha, and that's certainly a key element as well. And also the aspect of Habanis Tamei Chaver Barabim brings it back to what we started with, that this is a component of embarrassing people. So we also find a discussion in post-game about whether this is only true in somebody else's presence or even not in their presence, and how that also gives us room to distinguish between different levels of severity, but underlying the fact that, again, this is a very serious principle that we find, and we're told to avoid at all costs this element of drawing honor through the process of knocking down somebody else. Okay, we will stop there. Have a wonderful evening.